Welcome, everyone, to our third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle call. This is March 14th, 2018, and this is not a Thursday night. This is a Wednesday, as you all know, because I sent out notifications that it's really virtually impossible for us to do the call tomorrow night since I'll be on the way to the airport in San Francisco. It was kind of short notice, but they're having quite a wonderful looking event, actually, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the University of Michigan. I'm just looking right now to give you the details. If anyone's interested, the details are right here. Let's see, that would be for, here it is, Edge Week. Yeah, so it says on the event page that they have, that it starts on, it's actually going on right now, and it's a whole week, Monday through Friday, and Tuesday night, they're having Dr. Joel Kahn. That was last night. Dr. Joel Kahn, some of you may have heard of him. He's become quite well known. He's a prolific writer and speaker. He's a vegan MD based in, I think, in Michigan, actually, in the Detroit area. So he's right there. So he's giving a lecture. He gave a lecture last night. Tonight they're having Forks Over Knives screening documentary and a vegan dinner and then a Q&A with a former University of Michigan football player who's now gone vegan. And then tomorrow night they're having a professor panel. This is for the Veg Week, and it's a bunch of different professors who will be talking about food choices and the consequences for public health, environmental sustainability, and ethics. And there'll be free vegan food. And then tomorrow, and then the next night, Friday night, I'll be flying tomorrow night and then arriving on Friday morning and then speaking Friday afternoon and evening. And it's the final day. It says there'll be I'll be speaking, and then also a fellow named Daniel McKernan, he'll be speaking first. He's the director of an animal sanctuary called Barn Sanctuary in the area. And then I'll be speaking after that. So that's the story. There'll be, and this sounds kind of interesting. They're having a, I'll tell you what it is. Hopefully I remember, but after my lecture, there'll be a special vegan banquet, which is creating, it's incorporating campus farm produce, and some of the dishes are going to be highlighting the problem with food waste. And I'm not exactly sure how they're going to accomplish that. I had this image of them, sort of doing some dumpster diving and serving it to everybody. It's vegan, and we're recycling it. But I think it'll be something other than that, I hope. But there is an enormous amount of food waste. I mean, one of the worst things to me is it's bad enough to waste beautiful vegetables and fruits and grains, but when animals give their lives for their flesh and their secretions, and that people buy it and then just throw it away, that to me is just the ultimate in, I don't know what, disrespect, I guess is one word for it, and blindness. Callousness and uncaringness, but anyway, yeah. I have lots of stories about the importance of not wasting food. But anyway, so this is. I'm getting a little bit on a tangent. Now, this is the World Peace Diet Circle call, and you are all most welcome, not only to just listen in and not say anything if you so choose, but also to press *6. On your device, if you have such a device, like a phone of some kind, and then when you do that, I will be able to see on the computer here that you're effectively raising your hand, and I'll be able to unmute your phone, and you can talk away, and everybody can hear you. So that's fun. But anyway, that's how it works. Just press *6, and I was thinking it'd be nice to have a some questions, if anybody has any questions. And not just questions, I mean questions or concerns or announcements or happy events and new positive news that's happened, because this is our community and this is our once a month chance really to share what's going on and to learn from each other. So I'm really encouraging any one of you who feel like you'd like to share something with everyone to just feel free to do that. Don't be shy. Absolutely fine. That's really what this is intended for, one of the main functions. And there are people on the call who are alumni of the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training Program, and there are some people on the call who are going through it right now. So it's a nice blend of people who have gone through before and some people who are still wrestling, or we're all wrestling with these issues anyway, but some people who are wrestling with not only with the issues, but with the whole world, trying to understand how it all fits together. You know, it's quite a complicated set of issues, really, and it's taken me many years, and even to this day, I'm still amazed when I see how far, as they say, the rabbit hole goes. It really goes so far, and I still haven't gotten to the end of it. But just to see some of the interconnections throughout the economy, throughout politics, throughout the healthcare system, throughout the agricultural system, the religious system, educational system, the family system, relationships between people, various social justice issues. I mean, literally every aspect of our lives is intimately connected with food. It may not be obvious at the beginning, but once we begin to see the attitudes involved, it becomes really remarkable. So please don't feel that any question that you might want to pose is too elementary. There are no such things. All the questions are important. And before we dive into the material for this particular call, let's take a moment. Some of you know, we like to take a little time at the very beginning to just turn our attention within for a moment and feeling our connection with each other and with the movement that we're part of, to just reaffirm our sense of connectedness and our commitment to the cause. So let's just do that now wherever you happen to be. If it's easy for you to close your eyes, I think that's nice, but you certainly don't have to. And we give thanks as we feel our connection with this precious earth, beautiful and abundant planet that we're living on for a little while here, this human lifetime, and feeling our connection with all the animals who live here, whoever those animals are. Maybe just let yourself take a moment now, all of us, and just envision some of those animals. And it doesn't have to make any logical sense. Maybe it'll just be random images of animals. I just saw, some beautiful little chipmunks running around. Thinking of the animals, all kinds of animals. It's flying animals, swimming animals. There's animals who are running around on the earth. There's insects of many kinds. And who knows? I mean, there's all kinds of other living beings on this earth. So it's thinking coming on us to broaden our awareness of them. So let's feel our connection with animals, with wildlife, with also perhaps animals that we see that are domesticated in some way, and feeling our connection with the other human beings in our lives and the other people who are working to help raise awareness about the possibilities of living a more kind and sustainable and healthy life. Give thanks for our connections with these people and feeling our connections also with people in the past, the many wonderful people who have worked hard in the past of humans' history here on Earth, and many people coming in the future. So we feel our connection with the past, the future, and the present movement, and knowing that all the movements for liberation, various kinds, are all interconnected. Feeling our connection also with this whole human family, knowing that we're part of an awakening of human consciousness here on this earth right now, that we can give thanks for that and know that we're, as individuals, learning how to live and how to unlearn many of the delusions that were compelled, really, in our upbringing, that we were compelled to adopt, to let those go and to replace them with our intuition, with inner wisdom, the interconnectedness to our true nature. So we give thanks for everyone on this call and for this precious time we have together, and give thanks knowing that all of the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations that touches all living beings will be ripples to bring healing, peace, freedom, and abundance, clarity into our world. And so it is. All right, so there it is. So now here we are back again. And I guess all most of you are aware that we've been traveling the last 2 months in our rolling home, our trusty rolling home. We still have the same one that we bought way back in 1995. Nathan, gosh, 23 years ago. And we lived in it full-time for 17 years, and then we spent another full year in it a couple of years ago, and we still use it every year and pull it around. It's a fifth-wheel trailer. So we were in that for 2 months. And in Southern California, Arizona primarily. Also, we flew over to Florida and did 2 weeks of lectures there. And it was a very inspiring time. It's not so much to talk about, I guess, in the sense of it's all the United States. Most of you are from the United States of culture. You know the culture pretty much. And although there's many microcultures here, I did talk, I think, last month about the experience we had in San Luis Obispo, going to the meat sciences buildings and the dairy science area and so forth, and witnessing the killing of a pig and how the students were taught. These beautiful, really very beautiful young women. It's just quite heartbreaking to see them being shown how to kill a pig, and that that's part of what they need to expose themselves to, be exposed to, and to be either food in food science or to be in veterinarian science. And this heartless gaze that we teach them to adopt, looking at these animals as just machines, as just objects that are here, sort of biochemical, these electrical machines. We see each other, we see beings as these machines, and ourselves that way, really. I think this mechanistic view of life is one of the primary results of animal agriculture, and so to see the indoctrination to that kind of cold-hearted way of seeing life, and to, so you want to jump up, break the glass and jump in, but the system is huge, and this is going on continually at land-grant universities in every state in the United States, and it's the system we're born into. That's the basic thing. So, but after that, we went to Florida. We had a wonderful lecture tour there, and then back to Arizona, California. I did mention, I think, on Lily's World Peace Sunday last week, that we were in Tucson and in Phoenix, and we had a chance to spend some time with Kip Anderson, who's, as you know, probably an alumnus of the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training Program. He took it back in 2011. And in one of the sessions that we gave at the World Peace Jubilee in Cincinnati. And he went on to make movies, the most famous ones being Cowspiracy and then What the Health. And he's now working on another one, which he says is his most passionate about, because it has to do with, as you know, Cowspiracy was about the environmental implications, and what the health was more about, the physical health, bodily health implications of animal agriculture, and this will be about the spiritual and ethical and cultural implications of animal agriculture. And as you probably are aware, I think I mentioned that he's someone who really, I think, is a gifted filmmaker, because he is great at just telling his story, being Mr. Everybody, you know, just the typical guy just trying to avoid getting cancer, and the typical guy who's trying to help the environment and so forth. And yet he just is on this journey of discovery, which unfolds as you watch these films. And after completing our training in 2011, we were in touch quite a few times, actually, about him wanting to make a movie about the World Peace Diet. And it's great to see he's made this trilogy, really, about essentially some of the main ideas in the World Peace Diet. And so we get to spend most of an afternoon with him and his wonderful team. Before it was just him and Keegan. Now he had three cameras, I think, and about three assistants who were all helping with the filming, and kind of a film crew that came over from L.A. He lives in L.A. now. And so we did some footage, and we'll see how that all goes. But it really does reinforce in me that the underlying idea that, you know, people love actually learning about how animal agriculture is devastating to our environment. And I've met many people who said that watching Cowspiracy was what really kind of pushed them over the edge to want to go vegan. And other people, and many people, also love learning about the health benefits of a completely plant-based diet and the devastating effects of eating animal foods. And so What the Health is also one of those movies that I think many people have watched it and said, all right, I'm going to try this. I don't want to be sick and miserable. And as I often remind people, actually, being healthy oneself is not a self-centered motivation. You know, it is on one level. I mean, it's self-centered. I want to be healthy. And, you know, it's kind of about me. It's not about the animals. But being healthy is a great thing for the animals, and it's a great thing for other people. It's a great thing for everybody, for the whole world. You know, when we're healthy, when we take responsibility for our health, really make an effort to exercise properly, eat properly, have positive mental attitudes and so forth, so that our physical body is thriving and happy and so forth, that, you know, that we have a lot of control over that. And I've seen it so many times, really. It's heartbreaking when someone really doesn't care about their health that much. And very often these people are married to someone who's a vegan. I've seen this, you know, some guys, sometimes it's a woman married to a vegan man. I would say more often it's a man married to a vegan woman, and he just doesn't want to give up his meat and dairy and eggs. And so she, puts up with it, I guess, and she's a vegan and he's not, and years go by, and then he gets a stroke, you know, that kind of thing, or he has some problem, you know, major health challenge, and now she has to spend the next rest of, you know, maybe the next 5 years basically sacrificing her life for this guy who didn't really care about animals and or his health, and now she has to take care of this person. And I've seen, gosh, we've got friends in Florida who really, I mean, it's really terrible. I mean, the guy doesn't even, can't even function at all. And so it's a really financial burden and time burden. So when we're healthy and vibrant, it's so uplifting for everyone around us. You know, beautiful, healthy people. That's one of the things I love about the whole movement of veganism. It's really about beauty in the sense of a beautiful earth, celebrating the beauty of gardens, of orchards, of the beauty of flowers, beauty of fruits and vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds. I mean, they're very beautiful to just look at them and think of eating them. They're very attractive, brightly colored, very aesthetically pleasing, beautiful shapes, magnificent. Just so beautiful. And when we look at animals like pigs and cows and chickens, we look at them, they're beautiful too. You know, when we have any sense of the beauty of these beings, you see the eyelashes on their eyes, and you see their noses. You see the fur, the patterns, the beautiful patterns of color on their fur, or we see the beautiful feathers that they have, or we look at fishes, just a beautiful array of just how they're creative. It's magnificent how capable they are, how they swirl through the water, how the birds know where to go when and how they all manage to feed themselves and fit into the ecosystems that they live in and celebrate their lives. I'm just in awe of the beauty of these animals. And so to actually destroy that beauty is something I think we can hardly imagine. I mean, to eat, to kill, to turn a pig or cow or chicken into just a cut of meat, or to take their eggs and their milk from them, steal it from them, and cause such suffering to these little calves, who are so, just so amazingly vulnerable in our hands. That whole thing is so ugly. So I think that's really one of the points that keeps coming back to me, is the aesthetics of the whole thing, that health and vitality is natural, it's essential, it's part of our true nature, that it's healthy and vital rivers, and streams, and lakes, and climate, and all these things. And what we do as humans, unfortunately, through animal agriculture, we learn to ignore the beauty and somehow not care enough about the beauty to destroy it and destroy the beauty of ecosystems and of animals and of our own beauty. That's the amazing thing. One of the things that I really see more and more is the beauty of vegan people. The natural beauty that we, there's a much less of a yearning, I think, among vegan people to artificially adorn themselves in ways that are based on feeling inadequate, and to wear clothing that covers up things, or to wear makeup that covers things up, or whatever. I mean, to just realize that we're beautiful as beings and as expressions of life. However, we are such a beauty when people age gracefully and have wrinkles in around their eyes, from laughing or from feelings, experiencing feelings, and when people, have a rich life, we get such beauty as we get older. And I've noticed this. I mean, I shouldn't say it, but my sense of Madeline's beauty, it just gets so enormous. Just the beauty of someone who's kind of living a life according to their values and eating foods that are organic and plant-based and whole and healthy, and getting exercise, getting sunshine, and all the ways that we and working to try to make a better world, being creative. When we do those things, I think we just create beauty in our beings, and really, I think what the vegan revolution is a revolution of beauty. It's a revolution of bringing beauty into our lives and celebrating that beauty in every possible way, through music and art, through writing, through how we just present ourselves in the world, and architecture, and whatever we can do. Food, of course, itself is beautiful, and plant-based foods are really, as you all know, are becoming the cutting edge of culinary the culinary creations, because I think partly because they're just so naturally beautiful. Plant-based foods are just, vegetables, fruits are just what you can do. Is that they're just naturally beautiful, and animal-based foods are naturally ugly. And we have to cover them up somehow. We have to learn to look at them with a certain eye and to try to see the beauty. But when the way they... I don't even want to talk about it, but anyway, what we do to animals is so ugly and horrific. And then just traveling around the country and in other countries too, and really seeing the real ugliness. Gosh, that's what struck us so much when we were traveling in our RV recently, the hideous ugliness of animal agriculture is mind-boggling, and how our economy, how our government, how us, the people, through our taxes, pay. I mean, we spent quite a bit of time around these irrigation canals. These are incredibly expensive. I mean, the Colorado River is pumped over mountain ranges with gigantic electrical pumps that, you know, some of them are nuclear powered. It takes enormous amounts of energy to pump this water many hundreds of miles, all the way to California, and, you know, many and hundreds of miles through California. And to maintain these irrigation canals, and this is all basically paid for by the government, it's all going to animal agriculture operations. They don't have to pay for that. It's just provided for them. And they could use it to grow hay and corn and soy to feed the animals, and you just see these massive mountains of sewage and hay, and then these cows and these feedlots, and just the disgusting smell that covers thousands of acres of, I mean, it's really, people are eating this stuff and they don't realize what they're doing. People, it's like the ugliness, it gets into our bones, and then when we're eating this ugliness, what does it do to us, you know? So what we're seeing, I think, is a revolution of beauty and a reawakening of the beauty. But right now, I think, as we're all aware, we have huge challenges. But I think it's important for us not to let these challenges get us down, to realize the bigger picture, that we're here for a few decades and to use our time as best we can while we're here, and to be a voice for the spiritual dimension of life, which is the awareness of consciousness, the awareness of the fact that we're not just material objects, that consciousness is primary. Awareness, and awareness is what, when we look into the eyes of these animals, they are aware. There's someone in there, and we know that in our bones. Everyone knows that. We have to pretend to be ignorant, to be scientists, or to be people who think that these animals are just some things. That's utterly absurd. And so now, knowing better, we can begin to, as I say in the World Peace Side, act better and bring to light the possibilities of a way of living. And each one of us can contribute to that in so many ways. And that's one of the things I really love to explore in this call, is how we can do that and what are some of the obstacles to people doing that. So anyway, lecture conference was wonderful. Seeing Kip Anderson was wonderful. Seeing, you know, getting into deep discussions about spiritual and cultural and ethical dimensions of animal agriculture, the history of it, as you all know, if you've read the World Peace Diet, how the broad strokes of how our culture transformed when we started owning animals as property for food, and giving rise to a warlike, patriarchal society of a wealthy elite, and the domination of animals and of the sacred feminine dimension of life. And so we're born into that culture today. It's still driving us forward onto further conflict. And in an age of nuclear weapons, the insanity of this, and this is something I think it's really important to be aware of, that we're probably closer now, unfortunately, to a nuclear exchange, a nuclear conflict than ever. I remember back in the 1980s, at least people were yelling and screaming and having protests against the insanity of the nuclear weapons buildup and of making Russia into an enemy. And now, with the latest realizations that actually that Russia's nuclear capacity is far superior to the United States' nuclear capacity, and yet these crazy people in Washington are bent on demonizing Russia and pushing for a war with Russia. I mean, how more insane and suicidal can you be than to do that? And these are the kinds of people we have, you know, politically in Washington. And so this is nuclear threat and nuclear war. I guess that's my point. A nuclear war again, you know, it's the ultimate of human beings destroying the earth and destroying animals, because that's what will happen. And we won't just destroy human beings. We'll destroy this beautiful earth and all of the animals here. And that's one of the things I think it's, I don't know, I don't really know how to, what context to put it in, but, you know, we're working hard to promote veganism and to help people move to a plant-based diet. And I do think that's the most important thing we can be doing. In the background now, though, we have suddenly arising the prospect of a nuclear exchange with Washington saying that we might be able, you know, they used to say, you know, we might be able to win a nuclear war with any country, you know, like we could just, we have a missile defense, we can just bomb them and they can't get us. And Russia has now just shown that, they, you know, they have nuclear-powered torpedoes and nuclear-powered cruise missiles that are absolutely, literally unstoppable and that could destroy everything. So the idea of attacking a country that has much more powerful, more much more technically advanced, the United States won't catch up to Russia for probably another, probably never. Militarily, they're way, they're so far ahead of us because the United States military is so corrupt. They just want to make money. They don't care about making quality products. So nothing works very well. And so anyway, that's the situation, I guess, is what I'm saying, is that for animals, though, I mean, the end of the beautiful celebration here of animals' lives because of humans having fights and wars. And animals always suffer terribly in wars. It's been like that from the beginning, using horses, using elephants. These animals always were getting killed because of our conflicts. So peace, you know, peace is so important, and it does start on our plates. And I think the underlying idea, of course, is that our politicians ultimately reflect the people. So if we expect to have higher quality politicians, we need to make a higher quality citizenry, and that comes really from food, because if we're all complicit in stabbing and killing animals and not wanting to take responsibility for our own actions, then we're going to have a government that reflects that, and we're going to have the kinds of problems that come out of that. So, again, getting back to the roots of our dilemmas, I think it's critical in this time. So thank you all so much for your caring hearts and for and devoting yourself to helping to raise awareness about the consequences of animal agriculture, which are devastating to our climate, to our oceans, to our rainforest, but also to the landscape of our feelings and awareness and our intelligence. And I think this is the thing to keep bringing into awareness. And I've been very happy also while we've been traveling and giving these lectures to see that as we talk about these ideas, that there is just a growing sensitivity to them among people everywhere. And we've also been doing a lot of interviews for various online events and radio and so forth. And it's just great, I think, to know that there is a lot of receptivity to these ideas. And I think when we present the ideas in a way that's not judgmental, but just present the ideas in a way that shows that all of us have been wounded by being born in this kind of a society, then we begin to realize that we're all in this together and we don't have to fight each other. Really, the time is to cooperate and to help bring this message to as many people as we possibly can. So I'm going to stop right there. I didn't want to go on too long here. I was thinking if there's a few ways we can go from here. I'm happy, but I would like to say if anyone does have any questions or concerns, please press *6, specifically about anything I've been saying or completely unrelated, because everything is related, actually, to animal agriculture in the sense of our physical health, psychological, spiritual health, our environment, economy, and politics. I mean, it's all interrelated. And there are massive connections that are, I mean, they are huge. But I also wanted to say that since we have Judy Carmen on the phone with us, I wanted to just ask Judy if she could maybe share a few things with us, because she's such a wonderful resource and has been interviewing people for a few years for the IDA, in Defense of Animals, Vegan Spirituality Project with her and Lisa Levinson. And I was on there. I was interviewed by them just recently, and I think it's so great to see that we had this kind of an ongoing, they're doing an ongoing, I think it's the second Thursday, actually, of every month they do Vegan Spirituality interview with somebody. So, Judy, I'm going to unmute you. Thank you for pressing star 6. Are you there?
I am. Hi, Will. Hi, everybody.
Yep. Hi, Judy.
Glad to be on your show, and thanks for all the great things you just said and the encouragement that you always give us. Lisa Levinson, I asked her if she could be on the call with us too, but she had a class to give, so she can't be with us, but she said to tell everyone hi. And I just wanted to thank you, Will, for letting me talk about this. Lisa and I have been doing this for, I think, about 3 years now.
3 years.
Every month, interviewing a guest who has a connection to vegan spirituality. They've all been vegan, and they have something to share with us. For example, we had Dr. Will Poe on last Thursday, and it was perfect. We're so in tune with each other, I think, what the Circle of Compassion is doing and the World Peace Diet and all of your work. We're just right in tune with you and trying to help people see the spirituality of veganism and the ethics of veganism. And so what we're promoting, Lisa and I, with Vegan Spirituality is basically exploring veganism as a spiritual practice. So a small piece of all your work, Will. So we've interviewed, besides you, we interviewed Jenny Jones.
And you also had Madeline on a little bit, too. That was nice.
And Madeline, yes. We're so glad that Madeline joined us. And you're right. She's gorgeous. And just a beautiful light in this world. An example of someone who, what eating vegan can do for your physical health.
Right.
So, she just glows. But Jenny Jones was one of our guests. She is, just as an example, she has her own vegan spirituality group that meets in Morro Bay, California, where she lives.
Right.
And she also had the first Central Coast Veg Fest. I think you were there, Will, in San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, we were actually there right before the Veg Fest. We were in Florida during the Veg Fest, but we were part of the planning of it,
Right, okay. So anyway, she was really fascinating to listen to, and we've tried to find spiritual leaders from many different faiths to be interviewed. For example, we had Alan Dale, who's an American Tibetan Buddhist, and he had a lot of interesting things to say. And one of the messages that keeps coming through is how important it is for all of us to come from a centered place in order to do the work we're doing, so that we're not overwhelmed by the suffering that we see among the animals. Alan said, we're not seeking enlightenment for ourselves. We're doing it for the betterment of all life.
Right.
But how important it is, because if we just become overcome by all of the suffering in the world, then it interferes with our ability to do the work.
Right.
And we interviewed Marian Achulius. And she, really neat lady, a religion scholar, with, and her focus is animal ethics And she is a member of the Order of Interbeing that Thich Nhat Hanh established.
Right.
So it was great listening to her. And,
mm-hmm.
And then we talked another month. One of our interviews was with Andrew Baer, and he is the chapter leader for the Silicon Valley chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals, which is a great group. And they're really working hard to try to get Buddhists to go vegan, basically,
right.
And point out why that's so important.
Right.
Be consistent with their values, which are very clear. And
yes.
then we've had several Jewish rabbis, Dr. Shmuley Yanklowitz was one of
he's from Phoenix, I think.
Scottsdale.
Right, well, yeah, that's where we actually did the interview with Kip Anderson, was at his temple in Scottsdale, Arizona.
He had been
interviewed right before me, I guess, in the morning, and then we were there in the afternoon.
Yeah,
so very interesting.
He's the president and dean of the Valley Beit Midrash. I don't know if I said that right. But he talked about, with us, he talked about all souls having the same essence, and that our essence, our basic essence, is compassion. So we've been doing this for about 3 years, and so there's a lot of them. I won't go to all of them, but they're all just wonderful, and you can listen to them because there are
archives.
Yeah, there's an archive. And I wanted to make sure everybody knew you can go to veganspirituality.com to find the archives, and also to sign up if you want to be alerted when we're going to have a talk. But it's always the second Thursday of the month. And so veganspirituality.com. And the other way to get there is to go to, this is part of In Defense of Animals, so you can go to their website, idausa.org, and go to events, and you can find it that way, too.
Great.
So,
yeah, you interviewed Thomas Jackson, I think, Compassion Project.
And we're so excited about his film. I know you're going to be in it, and we don't know when it'll be ready, but his will be maybe similar to Kip's.
It'll be interesting,
No yet, but the idea that Thomas has is to interview spiritual leaders and show people, you know, that there's a lot of spiritual leaders now that are vegan or at least considering it as something that is compatible with their religious teachings. And more, we're learning about vegan churches out there, and we just found out about a vegan Jewish temple in Canada that's totally vegan. And you found one in Arizona,
in Tempe, Arizona.
Yeah.
There's a couple that has started a vegan church with Sunday morning services. I mean, their thing is. I haven't been to it, but I met them talking to very nice people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's interesting to see the
And we're Lisa and I, and also Vita Stram with
Frank Hoffman.
We're putting together a list of vegan churches and temples, any place at all, even if it's online, that is having services that are vegan. So if anybody knows of any, please let me know or us know.
Or also, I think isn't it also like they could be churches where the minister is a vegan or vegan, so it's vegan friendly, like, because there are some Unity, I think a few Unity, a few Unitarian
mm-hmm.
Where the minister is vegan, and so that makes it easier for the congregation to hear the message. Although a lot of the ministers don't want to talk about it.
We're actually sending out a questionnaire, and we've got three categories. One is vegan mm-hmm. churches, one is vegan-friendly churches, and one is vegan pastors. So we'll be compiling lists as we hear more and more, but it's getting pretty exciting. I think that it's just another example of consciousness rising. And even though we're seeing all this suffering around the world and more destruction than we've ever seen, we're also seeing more consciousness rising than I think we've ever seen, as far as numbers of people and good deeds and awareness and veganism. So it's very, very uplifting, and I think what we're learning from you and from many of these leaders is go within and find your inner peace and work from there. And I did want to mention that I have read your new book, Will, and I just love it. And I think that everybody should get a copy because that's exactly what it's about, is how to find your inner peace, how to meditate and get in tune with your own intuition and your own inner wisdom, maybe is the best way to talk about it. So that when we have to take action to help animals or people or the earth, we can tune into our inner wisdom.
Right.
So definitely. It's on Amazon, right?
Yeah. It's called Your Inner Island, The Keys to Intuitive Living. That's probably the easiest way to get it on Amazon. You can get it from our website, too. Mm-hmm. But it's on Amazon, either as a regular book or as a Kindle kind mm-hmm. of book. Or we don't yet have it as an audio book, but maybe at some point we'll get it as an audio book.
It would be
too.
Good if you did, because
yeah,
then you could put the music in there.
Right.
With the audio.
Right, yeah, have the whole thing as a
right. But each you need to get Will's music too, because because the music,
this the island, yeah, the Islands of Light CD is kind of goes along with the with the book, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So you can listen to the music as you're reading the book. Will has exercises that really help you go deep, and the music helps even more. So, and it's Will's music. So, you know, highly recommend it, and I really feel like this is where we all are heading, is to that inner place where we can really find the true wisdom that we need in our true nature, mm-hmm. so that we can be light for the world and help lead people in the direction of this vegan world we're trying to create.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like Martin Luther King said, it's only light can cast out darkness. Darkness can't do that.
Right.
We have to be that light. Yeah, well, thanks, Judy. It's great to hear a tiny little taste of some of the people you've interviewed over the years, and I know I'm sure it's a great resource. And and when we travel, actually, sometimes we give lectures to the local vegan spirituality group, so they put something on or they help coordinate something. So I think it's a natural connection that we can all share, because I think the movement really, it is a spiritual movement, whatever you want to call it. It's a movement questioning materialism. You know, materialism is the whole delusion of just seeing dead matter when we see beings. And
right.
Spirituality is seeing a being, and then we naturally have a sense of respect, and we see the interconnection. And then the values that come out of spirituality, out of that awareness, are the so-called spiritual values of caring and kindness. And so I think it's really outrageous in this day and age that there are spiritual teachers that don't talk about veganism. You know, I mean, that they're sort of, or talk against veganism even. I mean,
yeah.
I think really it's in many ways, I've talked to quite a few people who said that they don't want to go to church anymore because they don't want to go to and hear somebody up there talking about kindness and love and forgiveness. And then afterwards, everybody eats meat and dairy products,
and
there's such a total disconnect
between what they say they're doing.
Yeah, oh. It's like, you know, come on. So then they feel like, well, where can I go? There's no other place. Like, you know, because people do have a yearning to have spiritual communities of some kind, and so there's a big void. I think a lot of people just do something, you know, go into nature. I mean, that's great. Go into nature or read a book or but I think if we can create new kinds of ways of connecting our natural human urge for transcendence or for awakening or for awareness with the compassion, living a compassionate life, you know, these are powerful communities. I think that's really the future of our movement, actually, is
there's a lot of potential there. There is, like you said, there's a lot of vegans who are not interested in church or any kind of religion because they've been burned. They've gone
right.
And been, you know, been really hurt by things that have been said, or, hey, let's all go to the zoo for a church picnic or something like that.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, there's been a lot of people who just bristle at even the word spirituality or religion. But at the same time, there's that longing for that, like you said, the transcendence, the spiritual awareness, and just belonging to a spiritual group. So, but I think the time is right, I think, for this to kind of turn around. And like you said, there are some vegan spirituality groups that are meeting in person in different cities. And actually, you can find out about that on veganspirituality.com too. And we have those people, you know, come up with a format for their meetings and suggest different ideas of, you know, things they can do, music that they can play and that sort of thing. And so that's been really exciting to see that grow and more vegan spirituality groups popping up in physical places so people can actually go. But one of the reasons that we started the interview, the conference call every second Thursday, is for people who didn't have one in their town. So they can at least be with us. A month, and listen to a spiritual leader who gets it, you know, and sees that connection and helps us come up with a way to explain why veganism is completely compatible with any religion, and maybe encourage the people who listen in to be able to approach their rabbi or their leader and say, hey, look, this only makes sense to be vegan because we're all talking about loving kindness and loving God's creation and all of this, or depending on which religion it is and what language they're using, but it's the same basic message. And yet there's, like you say, the disconnect. Among a lot of Buddhists, you know, where the message is so clear, they still are saying, well, we have to eat meat because in Tibet they have to eat meat because there's no place to grow vegetables. And, you know, but they might be in, you know, some nice Florida area where they could grow whatever they wanted. So it's just a psychological disconnect and definitely a spiritual one.
Right. Wow. Well, thanks so much, Judy. It's there's so many ways we can go with this conversation, but I think it's what you're saying is the basic truth that we have, you know, I noticed when I go to China, in Asian religions, they're not so, for the most part, I mean, for the most part, it's not totally true, but for the most part, they're more vegan friendly. And they really, in many countries, they're the force that's really primarily promoting veganism. Whereas in the West, it's, in a lot of ways, the religious traditions are promoting meat eating because they've been, as I say in the Wolfie says, they're sons of the herding culture. You know, they're part of the herding culture. They're right. Embedded with the herding culture. So all the teachings more or less go along with it. And I think it's great when people can go to the ministers or the rabbis or whoever they are, the spiritual leaders of these different spiritual teachers and religious teachers, and talk about it and just apply pressure, because what I've discovered is most of the people who are in these positions, in many ways they have to have happy customers. You know, that's kind of the underlying thing. They, you know, people come on church on Sunday morning, and the minister, or if it's a minister, say, you know, the person, whoever it is, wants to have a happy congregation. He wants to be well liked, or she, whoever it is, and they want to be successful. And the last thing they want is to have their attendance get less and less,
right. Yeah.
and have the offering get less and less. And and I think, you know, there's this basic thing, and that's true with the Buddhist. I think it's true with all the groups. You know, they want to have a vibrant community, and so, you know, there's this deep fear that, gosh, you know, if I talk about veganism, people are going to, you know, just not come. They're going to feel like they're being judged. They're going to feel like they're being asked to do something they don't want to do. And so they just go along. They just keep, you know, they just resist the whole thing. And I think the thing to understand, and it's kind of interesting, I'm not sure how it's going to pan out, but, you know, like in the Wolfie side, I talk about how, you know, there's a lot of very strong evidence that the early Christians, the Ebionites, Jesus's first followers, and were definitely related to the Essenes, and going back probably to the Pythagoreans and Buddhists, and they absolutely took a pledge not to cause suffering to animals. I mean, that was part of their thing, not to eat animals. And not, you know, they were vegetarians. I guess you could say today probably vegans, and they refused to participate in any wars. They refused to hold slaves. They refused to gamble or drink alcohol or to swear oaths. But they had all these, you know, kind of strict ways of living. And how, you know, in order to become the religion of the empire, basically most of that was all completely abandoned. And now today, anyone who tries to live that way is probably considered to be a blasphemer in many ways, going against the religion. So the religion has been completely subverted, and by the herding culture. You know, that's a great irony. So we're talking about really returning the spiritual essence back into the traditions that's been suppressed. And I think that's the great wounding that we've all endured. But, you know, I remember growing up in Sunday school and learning, you know, everything I was supposed to learn, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me, because I think it all seems so hypocritical. And I think today that's a huge issue in the religious world. So nowadays, I think there's a great opportunity for veganism to show that you know, we can be relevant here, and we can live a spiritual life by being practicing, not just theoretically, but practically, kindness and compassion in our daily lives for people, for animals, for ecosystems, and to do something meaningful like questioning the official stories, the narratives of violence and oppression and exploitation. That's really the heart and soul of all of our religious traditions, I think, essentially. If you get to the gold, you know, it's been sort of buried underneath the centuries of accretions. So this is part of the rejuvenation, I think, and it's a great thing.
Yeah, it is. And I loved what you said when we interviewed you, but I think I heard you talk about it on your last call, too, about your experiences with the in Asian countries and how they are more vegan friendly, because their spirituality has always kind of been in tune with that, whereas the Abrahamic religions here have been working to justify killing animals for 10,000 years.
Right.
A lot of programming.
Right. And everything that goes with it, war, the domination of women and everything, it's all sort of the same package. All right. Well, I don't want to go on and on here, but it's so nice to hear your voice, and thanks so much for sharing with everybody. Really appreciate it. Give our love to Lisa,
too. Well, thanks for letting me share it.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Someone has raised his or her hand. That's area code 408. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone. And I wanted to hear maybe from Marlene also, if possible. Marlene, if you're open to hear some of what you've been up to lately. But, go ahead.
Yeah.
Who am I speaking to?
Hi. Hi, Dr. Tuttle. This is Jacqueline Texier. I'm in San Jose, California.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Yes, and continuing to think about the vegan churches, because as Judy was speaking, I looked up vegan churches, so I see through allcreatures.org, there is actually a directory of veggie pastors and churches, a Compassion Internet Christian Church ministry. So I looked here, I saw only five under California and none in the San Francisco Bay Area. So it says if you don't see your church listed, church in your area, look at Christian Ministries for Animals and the people who care about them. Now here I do see, where did that go?
This, by the way, what you're talking about is exactly what Judy was talking about. I mean, that is exactly what Judy was just saying. That is the same thing. That's the Vita Strands. That's it. So you got your finger right on it.
I did find it. I thought maybe this was an additional one.
That is the one. That's the same one that we're talking about.
Okay. Well, you travel a lot, so I wanted to get more specific. In Loma, none in the Bay Area. I could certainly, I could see getting together with some vegan friends of mine and starting one in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's exciting.
Something that Judy didn't mention was Catholicism, the Catholic faith.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting that it just so happens that I've been Christian for a while. I'm very serious about the Catholic faith. My saint, my patron saint, is, of course, Saint Francis of Assisi. I pray every day. I just don't go to church that regularly. And even a place like Center for Spiritual Enlightenment right here in San Jose, which is a multi-denominational spiritual place, CSE. I love it. Been going there for years. But they're vegetarian, but they still serve dairy.
I see.
Which is disappointing to me. So I'm refining my search to see...
Yes.
A vegan, they talk about ministers and pastors, priests for that matter, because in the Catholic Church you're dealing with the father, priests.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But that shouldn't be too far-fetched, because after all, you follow along. And we have Pope Francis, who actually models himself after St. Francis of Assisi, speaks very respectfully of Mother Earth and all the life she supports. Clearly, Pope Francis is in touch with all the disastrous things going on and threatening the environment and our natural resources, and even the land, public lands being up for grabs. And I know that Pope Francis is very disheartened.
There's also a wonderful...
all of God's creatures, no doubt.
Right. No, I think, that's true. I think there's definitely lots of foundational material for a strong vegan movement within Catholicism. And I think there's some great writings from a number of places, and but I think it really needs people that are sort of on fire with the message. And I don't know that many. I know there's one guy. His name is Father River Sims. He's a Catholic priest in San Francisco, and he's a vegan. He's gone through the WFUCI Facilitator Training Program. But his ministry, he's radical. I mean, his ministry is just on the streets of San Francisco. He's just taking care of kids that have overdosed on drugs and are prostitutes.
Ooh.
And he's really, his life is threatened every day practically. And he's an amazing guy. He's just out really in the hardest of all hard places to be. That's where he feels called to be, because he was there himself actually. So he's, before he became a priest, he was also a prostitute. So he knows what it's like, and so he's working with those people. But he's a vegan, he creates events from time to time and does things. And I think there's other people too. I've had a few people actually who are Catholic, either theologians or priests, have gone through the WFUCI training. One was from Europe, I think, and another one from, I think, somewhere in Africa. But I think, anyone who has a spiritual calling that's authentic, I think, could have their heart open to veganism. I mean, they should, and it would be nice to see it encouraged more. So anything you can do to help that along, I think it's really important to say.
Putting up a new website, just starting a brand new, I'm veering into that area now where I was doing some coaching. Like a life coach, but I'm really honing it down to something specific related to my newfound, I don't say that sounds facetious, but almost, my commitment, the deeper level of commitment to Catholicism.
Right.
And being baptized in the Catholic Church and going through all the training, which I'm willing
to. Right.
But, And I see there's a vegan, a vegan minister. There's a Larry J. in Loma Mar. I'm looking at the air, Loma Mar, California. You travel a lot. Do you know where Loma Mar is?
Loma Mar? No, I'm not sure.
50 area code.
Mm-hmm. There's also a woman who's gone through our training. Her name is Patricia Mickelson, and she has started a vegan Christian community, land-based community in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So if anyone knows anyone who wants to live in a vegan Christian community and just grow your own food and just live on the land, they bought land, they're actually doing it. I mean, they're actually doing it. So she used to live in Berkeley, and they found land in Arkansas, and she's been very nice. But anyway, so there are some things happening, but I think the more we can continue, each one of us has, like you say, you have a unique thing you can do to help out, that would be great.
And, that website, my new name now is Eat Vegan, Pray God.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
And because
thanks
it's sort
so
of
much,
like
Jacqueline.
I love, mm-hmm. I'm copying her, that author, Elizabeth Gilbert, I think, Eat, Pray, Love. So I
right.
Vegan,
right.
Pray God. And that
pray
makes
God.
Good domain.
All right. Great. Well, thanks so much. I have another person who wants to say something. We don't have too much longer, but really appreciate it. That's great. Good to hear from you, Jacqueline.
Thank you, Will.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, Marlene, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Will. Thank you.
Oh, good. Yeah, I wanted to just, I haven't heard from you in a few months, and I was wanting to see you've been doing. I know you're doing, always interviewing amazing people on your radio show, Vegan Nation, and I was just hoping you could fill us in maybe a little bit of perhaps a summary of some of the highlights or anything that you know, because I know you're really an encyclopedia of vegan knowledge and wisdom and understanding, and it would be just great to hear a little bit from you. If you have a few minutes.
Yes, thank you, Will. Tomorrow, Thursday, Vegan Nation airs at 4 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. That's Eastern Time.
Okay.
And WCUW.org is the website to listen to. And tomorrow's broadcast are three vegan activists in Dublin, Ireland. And they're really great. They do a lot of street activism.
Is that Roger Yates, maybe?
They work in the booth with Roger Yates on Temple Plaza in Dublin.
Right, the Vegan Information Project, right? VIP?
Vegan Information Project, yeah. And then they work with another one, VEGO, Vegan Education on the Go. And that's by another Irish man who's vegan who has a animal sanctuary as well. And then they do Cube of Truth, and then they do up in Belfast, V-Kind. So they do a lot of street activism and a lot of philosophical approach. And then Aveen is a vegan woman in Dublin, and she runs three online Facebook groups for vegans. So that's really interesting. But anyway, they're really great. So I hope y'all can tune in tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, WCUW.org. And then I interviewed Angel Flynn in New Zealand because she's the spokeswoman for Be Fair, Be Vegan, which is live in Melbourne, Australia.
But she's a spokesperson for who? For what?
Be Fair, Be Vegan.
Oh, Be Fair, Be Vegan. Right, Be Fair, Be Vegan. And that, which is basically, they're the people putting up a lot of the billboards all over England and now Australia, is it? Or New Zealand?
Yes. They're in Melbourne, Australia right now.
Wow. And is that related at all to the work of Sandra Higgins?
No, that's a different campaign. Sandra Higgins is Go Vegan World.
Okay, so it's a different one. Be Fair, Be Vegan is different. Okay, good.
Yeah,
yeah, they're very good, though. Those, they're very hard-hitting and really, I think, well-done billboards. The way they do it, it's fantastic.
Yeah, massive billboards, a huge campaign. So that's very exciting, and that's going on till April, and it started January 15th in Melbourne.
I see.
Yeah.
Wow.
The week
is that the same one with, I just want to ask you, is that the same one that has the big billboards up on Times Square?
Yes.
In New York City?
Yes. Right, they started in 2016 at 1500 Broadway, right there,
right.
The biggest billboard in Times Square. So, yeah, it's just amazing.
Wow. It must be a good anonymous donor behind all this, is helping to get the word out.
Yeah, that's very thankful. And then the week before was Vegan Kilimanjaro. 17 vegan climbers reached the summit of Kilimanjaro, and it was started by a man in San Diego, Michael Weinberg. And he's vegan, and he wanted to climb only with vegans. So he put it out, and he ended up with 16 other climbers, and they did it as a fundraiser for PCRM, for the Barnard Medical Center in Washington, D.C. So when they got
wonderful.
To the summit, they had a big banner that said Vegan Kilimanjaro, Plant-Based Nutrition Challenge.
Ah, excellent.
And it was their clothing, too. All their clothing was vegan, no wool, no leather, no down.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's great. And good publicity for the vegan cause. When I was in India, I met the first vegan who climbed to the top of Mount Everest. A wonderful young Indian man. And I think anything we do, there's so many great vegan athletes now, but yeah, those group events are great too, because it spreads the word.
Yes, and
so,
that means,
yeah.
I hope to interview him. Right, I befriended him on Facebook, so I'm happy to hear that. And also with spirituality, who's coming up is Reverend Frank Hoffman and his wife, Mary, of allcreatures.org on March 29th.
Wonderful. Yeah, he's great. He's one of the real, just absolutely committed vegan sort of old-time church pastor who is vegan. and gives a sermon every week about it and has it online. It's fantastic.
And
it's great.
And hearing about them remind me of you and Madeline, because Frank and Mary have been vegan for over 30 years.
Right. Yeah, he's been quite a while. It's true. Great. Well, you've got some great programs coming up, it sounds like. I'll make a note of this in the email I send out to everybody following you know, later on today, so people can tune in. And I guess you have it archived too, but it's better if they can call it tomorrow at 4.
Yes, thank you. One last one. I just wanted to tell the Catholic woman that coming up on April 4th, or the first Thursday in April, is a Catholic couple in the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York. And they have a priory retreat house where they serve all vegan food, so they're making an impact in their Catholic community in the Adirondacks.
Well, that's interesting. So they're a Catholic couple with a priory there. I see. Huh, great. Wow.
Thanks again. Thank you, everyone.
All right, Molly. Thank you for the update. That's great. Good to hear.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. So we have all kinds of news here. If anyone else would like to share anything or has any thoughts or questions, we're getting kind of close to our time to wrap up here. But it's been wonderful to hear from Judy and Jacqueline and Marlene. And I just turn our attention maybe just for a moment briefly to the resources for March that I sent to everybody. There's quite a few, as you can see at the top, quite a few essays that I've written or videos or interviews with links. Also the code, access code and the phone number if you're interested in listening to the talk I gave last Sunday on March 4th with Lily Macy on World Peace Diet Sunday. You can, if you want to listen to that, I mean, I think it went well. And also just to mention our Richard Potts, his name is. He went through the World Peace Diet training with us when we were on the Big Island not too long ago. And he's now gotten all involved in activism in Wellington, New Zealand. He's sending me all kinds of articles and pictures of his activism. They have vigils, slaughterhouse vigils. It's quite a strong movement. And when I was in New Zealand, it was just kind of sleepy and getting going, but now it seems to be really picking up steam. So that's great to see. And let's see, this is the usual thing. Lots of good news. Lots of uplifting stuff, a lot of disturbing stuff, too. I mean, this video of the abuse of dairy cows in India is quite shocking, but that's just the way it is. India is not a good place for cows anymore, if it ever was. And also, I think it's an excellent article by Dr. John McDougall, Where Do Vegans Get Their Protein? I really highly recommend this article because he really does a good job of showing how it's very understandable why people wonder, where do vegans get their protein? I mean, it's like, where do you get your protein? You know? Because even today, even like Harvard Medical School, Tufts Medical School, a lot of these, they're still putting out totally outdated information, you know, that somehow that plant-based protein is not as robust or whatever, as animal protein. And his essay is great because he really shows how they know this is not true. I mean, they know it. And there's the medical journals, there's collusion. I mean, it's really crooked. The whole thing, the research is clear. He has contacted the journals and the medical schools. They know that is absolutely baseless what they're saying, but they put it out. And one of the things that I wanted to mention tonight, I just wanted to mention this because it's sort of crystallization of a realization that I had, that I've been having for quite a while, but it's got stronger, is about the pharmaceutical industry and the ads that they run everywhere, like on TV and magazines. You know, the pharmaceutical industry is running so many ads. And the ads are for these pharmaceuticals that really, you know, they're ridiculous. I mean, no one can say the names of these things. You know, I don't know what they are, Adverall and whatever they are. So what I realized is that pharmaceutical industry is running these ads and spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars to run ads on the radio, newspaper, television, everywhere they possibly can, and they all have the same basic message. You know, ask your doctor if you have any symptoms. Ask your doctor, and they have all the side effects listed and everything. But the thing is, they're not really. I think they're not running these ads really to sell that particular drug. They don't really don't care about that. What they're basically doing is they're giving money, lots and lots of money to the media. They're just constantly saturating the media in pharmaceutical money. And what they're buying is not so much ads, they're buying complete control of the media. That's why the media is controlled. And they do the same thing. They give so much money to medical schools. They're always giving money. They're either paying, you know, for ads, or they're making donations of some kind to medical, you know, to medical schools, or establishing a chair or something like that. And they get their reward, you know. I mean, they get their reward, which is that, like I just, I was talking to Lily, she was saying earlier today how the Mayo Clinic is, you know, they're recommending to lose weight, they're recommending salmon or something. You know, it's like the pharmaceutical industry is even more anti-vegan than the meat, dairy, and egg industries are, really, because the meat, dairy, and egg industries, they are anti-vegan. But they're also in a position to kind of cooperate with this whole thing. I mean, they're selling meat, dairy, and eggs, and some of them are, you know, a lot of them are buying vegan meat, dairy, and egg companies. You know, they're buying into them. They can sell those products. And fast food companies are somewhat similar. They're anti-vegan, but, you know, McDonald's, they'll make money if they can sell vegan products. So they're not really anti. They're not so hardcore anti-vegan. But the pharmaceutical industry, which really in many ways does depend on a vast supply of sick people, I think really does not like the vegan movement at all. And so I think that's one of the reasons why the media is so consistent. The mainstream media is really quite consistently not on our side. They're just getting too much money in pharmaceutical money. And that I know, being raised myself, some of you have heard me say that in the newspaper industry myself. My father owned a chain of newspapers, and I learned growing up, you don't run news articles that will disturb or annoy the advertisers, because they'll pull their ads. They'll say, no, we're going to advertise with the other newspaper. They don't do that, you know, so heck with you. And you go out of business. It's just a big problem. Like the ministers, they want to have good cut. You want to have happy customers. Newspapers and radio and TV, you want to have happy customers too. And so when they buy the ads, they're buying control. Plus, they're instilling in everyone this message, you know, that to go to the doctor if you have any problem and get a drug. And that works, of course, in their advantage too. So the basic idea, I think, really is for us again to question the narrative of our society. Whoever controls the narrative controls the world. That's the real power. I'm beginning to think now that, you know, the mainstream media, its ability to control the narrative in the United States and Europe and all over the world, really through this massive reach of the story, you know, the story. It can really control public opinion, and is more powerful even than military or government politicians. I mean, the media is enormously powerful. So the more that we as vegans can create niches of media, you know, media niches, and I think this is one of them right here. Like, we get a call on the third Thursday, and it's a way that we educate each other. And the more we can expand that through books, through videos, through podcasts, through YouTubes, you know, all these things. And I think, you know, there's quite a push coming down now also to control YouTube and Google, and to take away the internet, freedom of expression that we have on the internet. So I think we'll be seeing more and more alternatives to YouTube and alternatives to Google, because Google, which owns YouTube, is really now solidly part of the American military establishment, and they do a lot of work for the military. And so I think we're going to see that we need to really, again, be more self-reliant
and not be dependent on the institutions that are really, in many ways, have blood on their hands, and they don't really want, in the big picture, to have this message get out too much. Although I have to say, I do have probably six years ago, I did one of the talks at Google series, and did a talk there, and it's up on YouTube. You can you can watch it. But I think, especially in the last few years, a lot of pressure is being put on more and more organizations to keep the message controlled. And so that makes it more important for us to be creative in the way we approach this. But I think the good news, of course, is that it's just natural tendency. People want to know what's going on. People want to be healthy. People naturally, I think, it's just increasing everywhere, questioning the eating of meat, dairy products, and eggs. It's becoming so obvious that it's devastating to our climate and to every dimension of our health and our environment. And it's just getting harder, virtually impossible to ignore it. And the good news is that if the mainstream media continues to ignore these things, people just don't pay attention to them. And millennials, young people, aren't even paying attention really anymore to the mainstream media at all. So it's becoming a dying beast. And so this beautiful image I love of the chrysalis. We have one actually by our shower out. So we have an outside shower every day. Madeline and I take our outside shower, even when it's only in the 30s. We're out there taking our shower. I just took one before the call. And there's a little chrysalis I'm not sure if it's a monarch butterfly. It looks kind of like a monarch, but it may not be. But it's so wonderful to think about that. You know, that this caterpillar, and I see them around, they're just munching, chewing up the leaves. At a certain point, they have an intuition to stop doing that, and they turn their attention in a completely different direction and sort of go inward and create this chrysalis. And this chrysalis is created out of the cells of the caterpillar, right? I mean, And that's the same cells of the caterpillar that creates the chrysalis. And there are certain cells within the chrysalis that are called the imaginal cells, which are sort of the first cells to begin to create the butterfly. And again, it's the same cells that are creating the butterfly. And they're evolving, and they're just arranging themselves in a different way. That's the thing. They just arrange themselves in a different way. But it's the same basic cells. And then this new being emerges. And I think there's a beautiful teaching in there for us that when we look at our human society and the individuals within the society, you know, as we transform ourselves, each one of us, we can help. And each one of us, in a sense, is a cell in the body of the chrysalis of our society. And a certain type of society that exists, it's based on violence and domination and abuse and killing and eating meat and all this. The cells of that caterpillar become the same cells of a chrysalis, which is, I think, we're entering that chrysalis stage. And then again, the same cells will become the butterfly that's flying freely through the air, on a whole different dimension of awareness and being. And I think it's beautiful to realize it's the same cells moving through. So people, as we evolve and change, we can arrange the structures of our relationships differently, and the foods that we're eating differently, and the way we relate to each other differently, and create a completely different organism, a completely different way of living on this earth, and that the way we do it is to do it in our daily life with our friends, our family members, our colleagues, and then let it expand from there. Start writing some poems, or start having a phone call regularly, or start having a cooking class maybe, or start whatever it is you feel like you can do that would be enjoyable and it would be something that you can contribute. It doesn't have to be big. Who knows? My old Tibetan teacher, he said that he didn't speak very good English, but he said, "Who knows what is big is big." I'll never forget that.
because I was really disappointed that I wasn't going to be able to make this really big initiation ceremony or something. And he said, who knows what is big is big. So you may think your thing is big and it's really not that big, or you may think it's small and it really isn't that small. Whatever you do, I think whatever we find, we can imbue the spirit of veganism into it. Whatever we're doing, the spirit of kindness, of love, of respect, joy, of creativity, of beauty, and let that radiate from us, and it will ignite. That's what it is. It's like you have a bunch of candles in a room, and they're not lit. Only one is lit, and when that flame passes from one candle to another, it's the flame that passes. It's the flame. It's the light that passes. It's the heat of the awareness. And I think each one of us is, it's the flame of our awareness is what triggers in someone else the flame of their awareness. And they will trigger that flame in someone else. So as long as we can keep the flame of our awareness bright and clear, then it will be touching others who are open. And just to keep going around like your little match and lighting the candles of other people that are all around us. They're all around us, and their wicks are just hanging out. Really, they're just hanging out there and blowing in the breeze, and they're just really looking for someone who has a light. Let me light your candle. Let me see you shine. And we can light each other's candles, and the whole world will be a much brighter place. So I think that's really the calling that we have today is to make sure our own candle is lit and shining brightly, and that we will be able to touch the best and the most beautiful part of people with that, which will cause our entire movement to grow in ways we can't even imagine. Thank you all very much. I think we're really kind of at the end of our time here. There are a few more things on the resources to just have a look at. This amazes me. Senate grants $1 billion in handout to save the failing dairy industry. I mean, read that article. It's amazing. $1 billion the Senate is giving because the dairy industry is just collapsing. Last year, something like 70 million gallons of milk just out of the fields because they couldn't sell it, and they're trying to drive up the price of grain by shrinking the demand. The year before, it was like another 60 or 70 million gallons of milk they poured out onto the field. Think of it. These poor cows are giving all these millions of gallons of milk. I mean, they're just working like heck to give milk, which is stolen from them. And then these dairy operators pour it out onto the fields because they're making too much of it. And they can't sell it. Nobody wants it. And the prices would be so low, they'd lose money. So they just dump it, and then we taxpayer money is going. I mean, talk about a failing, dying, ridiculous, obsolete, pathetic industry. I mean, it's outrageous. So I guess the point is not to be outraged, be happy in a sense. I mean, it's hard to be happy, but just to see that this is the evidence of failing industry and vegan milks and cheeses and vegan ways of living are absolutely unstoppable, and that it is the way of the future. If we have any future at all, this is the future, and there are many, many wonderful signs that we are moving in this direction. So, all right, I'll stop there. There's plenty more to talk about. We'll be meeting again in April, and the date in April, the third Thursday, is April 19th. Oh, my gosh, April 19th. That's Patriots Day. If you were born and raised like I was in Concord, Massachusetts, April 19th is the biggest holiday of the year. Everybody goes to the Old North Bridge, and we all celebrate the shot heard around the world, the beginning of the American Revolution, and we reenact the battle. My father always got his gun off the wall, and we marched down to the Old North Bridge. It was 8 miles away, big long hike. Tens of thousands of people show up there, and then all the way from Ohio, all these Boy Scouts come from Ohio, Indiana, New York, New Jersey. They come from everywhere. And reenact, and you have the red coats, and so celebrate the revolution. All right, so we have a vegan revolution. That's the real revolution. Much love to you all, and thanks so much for joining us. And really big thanks, especially again, to the special guests we had on a little bit. And I look forward to seeing you all and hearing and listening to you on April 19th. I will play a short piece of music now as we're ending. This one is just a nice little quiet piece. It's called Inner Sanctum.
enjoy, and much love to you all from Madeline and me. Looking forward to next month. And in the meantime, we're going to be in Southern California at OHI. We're doing a whole training there, actually. It's similar to a World Peace Diet. It won't be a complete World Peace Diet training, but it's a training. It's a four-day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 10th to the 13th training. You can go to our website to see the details. Also speaking in Culver City and in Pasadena. It's being set up by Patricia Todd, a World Peace Diet facilitator there. Also speaking in Clear Lake, and also in UC Davis. And so we have some nice things coming up in between now and then. We can just go out on this inner sanctum piece of music and give thanks for each other's presence and the opportunity that we have to be part of this movement. Much love to you all. Thanks so much. Good night, everyone. Thank you.